What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chew New Podcast. He's here. He finally made it. He was able to walk up them stairs.
Oh, God. No. It's going to be more fun tumbling down the stairs later.
Yeah, I told him I was going to push him. It should be fun. Yeah, I'm going to help me outdoors. It's going to be hilarious. I'll make sure to film it. Episode 238, I believe.
Okay.
I think it's 238. You're like, yeah, I guess, whatever. I lost count.
Look at your screen, dude. Look at your screen.
I'm looking at it. 237. We have a great episode for you guys today. We got another local wrestler in the house from a new breed. Great guy. I can't wait for you guys to meet him. But before we start, let's go ahead and do the opening. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chew New Podcast. Today's episode, it's going to be a very interesting one because we've been having a little chit-chat behind the camera. And I love chit-chatting with the guests before we start. Only reason why we get to know the person just a little bit more is they get more comfortable. And there's a lot of stuff we're going to cover the first half. The second half, we will get into the wrestling thing. But the first half, we're going to get to know Mr. Let me get him going right here. CYA the Podcast! What's going on, buddy? Welcome to the Chew New Podcast, bro.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Very happy to be here.
I know I reached out to you at one point, and I was like, I'm going to take a chance. See this guy maybe wants to jump on with us. Yeah. And let's see if he answers back. And he answered back right away. And the good thing is that he said, you know what? Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, man, he don't know what the pile of crap he just had to do.
Well, not just that, is that he took a pretty big hit one time in the ring.
In the ring, and we'll talk about that later on the podcast, because that's one we want to really get down to it for the...
We have diagrams and questions. And
angles and angles. Shots.
The math is a math.
But before we get started, man, thank you very much for coming to the podcast with us, man. And I appreciate you reaching out, coming to the little... studio that we have, beautiful little studio that we got now, but we're going to get to it. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, how you got into wrestling, and what made you become literally the shot that you took on the 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. How can you survive that? But let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man, where you grew up and where you're from.
From Louisiana. I was born in New Orleans, but grew up in the very, very top northwest corner of Louisiana, a little bitty town called Vivian. It's about 10 minutes from Arkansas, about 5 minutes from Texas.
Okay.
Lived there until I was like 28. It was the last few years that I was living there that I got into wrestling the first time. But what really prepared me for stepping into that was I got a black belt in karate, blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, cross-trained with some judo guys, did some Muay Thai. Worst injury I've ever had wrestling was a good kick in the liver, which I thought paralyzed me for about 30 seconds.
Gosh.
But martial arts, broke nose, couple teeth broken off above the gum, separated rib, broken hand.
Jesus.
That was much, much harder than the wrestling on my body. So I got to do some wrestling for a few years back when I was from about 28 to 30, 31.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I wrestled as El Chupacabra, the Anglo Luchador. There wasn't a lot of wrestling where I was in that area.
Right.
So in karate, you ever see those guys are beating up the invisible men around them?
Oh, yes.
So that's a kata. If you have someone fill in for the invisible people, that's called a bunkai. So we only would really do a competition for that for like once a year.
Right.
I was like, man, that looks like pro wrestling to me. I mean, you got your guys, they're taking the bumps, they're taking the hits.
Right.
They're making the guy doing the kata look great.
Right.
If nothing else, if I could just convince enough of my karate buddies and judo buddies to come together and do this, we got something, and then I will start moving into the more wrestly type stuff.
Right, right.
So I bought a ring, found a place to store it, bought a ring,
started
teaching myself how to do stuff more in a wrestling way.
Right.
Wow.
And then I was like, well, let me find something. Like, I'm going to go ahead and put on a show. Mm-hmm. There were some guys that were within an hour or two away. They weren't super great, but they were close.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good.
And it was back in the day of MySpace. So I got on MySpace.
That's a lot of age there, people. That's a lot of age right there.
It's fine. Let him finish.
Well, before you get on, I got some already comments popping in. You can see those right there for yourself, Mr. CYA. We got a, hey, it's my favorite. Really? Really, Jacinto? We're already starting off so early? Wow, okay.
Tell the world.
And I got another one here from Nina Gutierrez. And then I have another one here from Susana Lozano. There you go. We got some comments. Don't worry. He's seen every single comment that's coming in through, guys. He can see it on the opposite screen on the other side of the pod right here.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, so go on. So you're doing the ring. You have the ring. You're teaching yourself. What comes next after that?
So when I decided I was going to do a show, I had to get a couple guys at least that really knew what they were doing. So I booked a guy, Andy Dalton, and at the time he went by the name Angel of Sin. His real name is Byron Wilcott. He's been Big Daddy Yum Yum. He's done some developmental territory stuff for WWE. So he came in, he did a show. He was actually from Shreveport, which wasn't very far away. So it was whenever I did put on a show and I booked him to come in, he could go visit his mom. So it was good for that because he lived a little ways off.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few times coming in, doing the show, working out with me a little bit beforehand, he decided I didn't suck and I wasn't a dumbass. So he invited me to go with him when he was booked on shows, mm-hmm. and I would get there a few hours before the show. We would work out for a couple hours. I'd go sit off to the side. They would do the show. And after a few months, eventually somebody didn't show up, and Byron was comfortable telling the promoter, that guy over there can work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started getting bookings. I did that show. I didn't do anything stupid. I did what I was told. I did it well enough. And that's when I started going and doing shows. I did that for a few years. There's a sad version of what happens after that that has me leave wrestling for 15 years. But then, back to the good part, I moved back to the Valley. I'd been here a couple of years right when the pandemic started.
I completely missed
all of the live events that y'all have so much of down here, the festivals and all the, oh my God, so much wrestling. Because back when I did it before, every show practically was 4 hours away. You almost had to go to at least Dallas or something. And now, I mean, there's like 2-3 shows somewhere in the Valley almost every weekend. It is so beautiful.
Yeah.
So all of the fans and all of the wrestlers are so incredibly lucky to have that environment here to train and to work in.
And still growing.
Yeah, way awesome. Growing quite a bit, man.
Yeah.
Growing quite a bit.
But when I came back this summer, I was looking for stuff to do. I happened to see New Breed do a show there at the Moon Rock. And then I saw that they had a regular show at the Landmark. I was like, well, I got to go see some more of that. I really liked the way that they worked together.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I saw their show there. Then I'm like, oh, they said they have a wrestling school. You know what? I don't think I'm too old yet.
You just said MySpace, bro.
Yeah. I think I'm still in good enough shape. Let me reach out to these guys and see what I can still do.
Right.
So I was blessed that I did get back into doing weights and gotten some yoga the last couple of years, get my flexibility as good as it's ever been, which ain't great.
Mm-hmm.
But went in there, worked out with them, took a month or so to knock some of the rust off, but I could still do almost everything I could do back in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It was, what was longer was getting my mind right.
I got you.
How do I read everything? How do I coordinate everything?
Right.
And then I was like, yeah, I can still do that. And the New Breed guys are a great group of guys to train with and to learn with. And
even
to
Toxico. With.
No. Even Toxico. Even him. So it's, that's kind of how the wrestling journey in broad strokes happened. So I owe really, really big debts to some people that gave me opportunities that they didn't, you know, they weren't getting anything out of anything. Sometimes it took away from what they could have been working on to help me.
I really
appreciated that a lot.
Right. Yeah, you got more people saying, love you, Eugene. Great interview. What a handsome wrestler. Miss Suzanne Lozano, we're reaching out here. And I got also Frank the Tank tuning in.
Oh.
I mean, he's the toughest at-hole I've ever met. And he goes, I hate you, Toxico. Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, I saw the video.
Message.
STDs, way to go, buddy. Wow. You do one podcast, like you said. But So after the wrestling, I mean, you're doing the wrestling now. What do you do on your off time besides that?
Hang out with Susana Lozano.
Besides that, man.
What else? What I do to pay more bills than wrestling does.
Yes, yes.
My master's degree is in counseling, but when I first moved to Texas back in 08, 09, it happened to be at the time that the state supported living centers were having to increase the services in their behavior services mm-hmm. department. So working with the guys and gals that had an intellectual disability but also had some comorbid behavioral issues mm-hmm. that would make them either dangerous to themselves or others.
Right.
So that was my introduction to working specifically with the IDD, intellectually and developmental disabled population, and to behavior analysis as a field of psychology.
Right.
So I did a few things in that. Currently, the senior clinic director for Bright Path Behavior, and I oversee the Alamo and the Harlingen clinics. And what we do is early intervention. Mostly it's little kids, year and a half to 2 years old, all mm-hmm. the way up to 5 or 6. We take everybody. And then if they're older than that, it kind of depends on what their challenging behaviors might be like. Is it a good setting for them with the smaller kids? Mm-hmm. And we help them develop their communication skills, their adaptive skills, so they can get, eventually, we hope, be able to participate fully in school, to be able to live their life and have friends and communicate well with their family. And it's been one of the best jobs I've ever had. I love the people that I work with. And when the families get to come back to us and tell us, you know, my kid's looking at me, you know, because they used to just not make that eye contact. They used to not tell me what they were thinking. If they were feeling uncomfortable, if they were having a great time, they just didn't have the words. Mm-hmm. So when mom and dad will tell us, like, hey, man, they're doing this now. They're telling us. They're participating in family things, and they're playing with their brothers and sisters.
That's awesome, man.
It's a huge change in their life.
That's awesome, man. I mean, and we did have a chit chat in the very beginning before we started the pod, and we are in the month of April, which is autism.
Autism awareness.
And I was telling CYA here that I do have a son that's in the spectrum, and you know, and it's a one day at a time thing. My son's great, you know. There's times where he's kind of off. There's times where he's just upset, and you just have to roll with it. My wife is with him pretty much most of the day, you know, with him out day in, day out. So I go to work and I come back, you know, and she's with him. But it's amazing. It's amazing that you know, there's so many programs out there. You know, we try to search for stuff. You know, we try to get him maybe like into football or basketball, maybe some self-defense, you know, something that he wants to do. And sometimes he's just like, well, you know, I don't really want to do that. He shies away. He's more into the drawing, animation, all that good stuff. But I know you had told us a little bit of something about the little unicorn right here.
Eugene is somewhat of a therapist himself. He's made by a company called Pillow Fort.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And one of the things that they do is they make some little critters like Eugene, and they're weighted. Lots of people, neurotypical or not, enjoy it, but it's really, really common for the folks with autism mm-hmm. where weighted blankets, weighted vests, or like a weighted stuffed animal, it's soothing and it's extra relaxing.
Yeah.
When I introduced Eugene to some of the folks at work today, one of the ladies that I work with said, I've got one of those guys, and I just set him on my chest when I go to sleep, and it helps me go to sleep better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that's one of those beautiful things. And if you've ever seen, if you haven't, everybody should watch it. Temple Grandin, the movie. Dr. Grandin is a lady with autism, and she was nonverbal until I think she was 6. And when she ended up eventually going to college, she made what she called a squeeze box. And she was inspired by seeing how the cattle, because her family was in cattle, when they were giving them shots, they run them through the chute, and they squeeze them.
Yes.
And the cattle would relax, they'd give them the shots. She's like, I'm freaking out, it works for the cattle, let me try it for me.
Right.
So she made a small version for herself.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen this film, yes.
Yeah, and she did like a little research project with a bunch of neurotypical people, and most of them also like, yeah, it's This is a little weird, but you know what? It does feel good.
Right.
Wow. And,
you know, so that was some early research and just some pressure as being a soothing, calming kind of a thing.
Right. Huh. Yeah, and I know there's a point where she's going through every step of her life. There's always a door, and she opens it and goes into something new. My favorite part is, well, actually, I'm not going to spoil it for you guys if you've seen it, but if you haven't, you should watch it, where they're at a, I guess it's a gathering of parents mm-hmm. and children that are in the spectrum.
Right.
And she answers a question, and he goes, do you have a child that has autism? She's like, no. And like, they all turn around, and he goes, I have autism. She's like, they're all like, what? He goes, yeah, I went to college, I did this, I did that. My mom, I mean, you can see mom in the background, she was tearing up so much. I'm trying to hold it right now because it's a very emotional moment.
Right.
And the parents are like freaking out, like, oh my God, like a sense of hope, if I may say. Mm-hmm. It's just a very great film. If you guys want to look for it, it's a very great film. But so you work with these children almost every day?
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a paper pusher now.
Okay.
There's so much paper to push. But it helps me facilitate the other behavior analysts and then the technicians to be able to do their jobs better. Right. Therapy is expensive, so everybody's got insurance.
Right, right, right.
So we have to do the stuff the insurance wants us to do. We have to document stuff the way they want us to. And a big part of my job is to make sure all that stuff is running smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has all the materials they need so that they can do the skills building exercises. So it's one of those things where, like, the title makes it sound like I'm in charge. My day to day makes it feel like I am the biggest gopher in the world. It's totally worth it.
It's awesome, but at least you're doing your part, man. You're doing your part to keep the process going, man. And I know I was reading the shirt that you get. By the way, the cap, these bad bags.
The
I love this.
The merch is
amazing.
It's amazing.
You can see that right there. Right there. So you got that CYA. And he came in and it was like, check this out. And she was like, look what you got. You got a new hat. I go, what? Got a new hat. And sure enough, man, these are awesome.
You
have
no
shirt to match it.
This shirt?
This
one you haven't put on yet?
I haven't put on this shirt yet.
The one to rubber band off your body?
Yeah, it's going to stretch, man. I love what it says right here. It says, right there, this is never apologize for being
an asshole.
I apologize.
He says, don't apologize. Never apologize. For being an asshole.
For me.
I like this shit, man.
And in the realm
awesome.
Of
no,
trivia related stuff, the Duke of Athol is the only person in Europe allowed to have a private army.
Really?
He
doesn't do anything with it. I don't know what they do with the private army. And the last two Dukes of Athol have both lived in South Africa, but hey, he could have one if he wanted one.
There you go. Yeah, so, I mean, now you're doing this is the pay the bills job. This is what we just finished talking about. Now, the rest, to balance both wrestling and the job, is it, you know, kind of not stressful, but I mean, does it affect a little bit?
It could be a little bit off-putting. If, say, on Sunday I'm getting ready for a match, I've got a match, okay. No, we know what's going on, this, that, the other. Oh, I need to make sure the schedule is fixed for these people by Monday, by tomorrow morning. And I've got to do this because, you know, somebody's like this, that they don't know when to come to work. You know,
right.
So it can pull me out of the mode a little bit.
Right.
Mostly it's the it's just the day-to-day stuff. I just started working out with a private, a personal trainer, Hybrid 45 in Brownsville.
There you go. Big shout out to them.
So Marco's a great guy because I was doing okay doing the weights by myself. But it's not what I'm great at by any means. And I don't have the time to go do the research to make sure I get the most out of it.
Right.
So I'm going to let Marco help me with that. But the goal is at least 3 days a week where I'm doing the weights because it's important.
Right.
The number one thing you can do besides not do something stupid to keep from getting hurt is your flexibility. So I'll pull up a yoga video, especially yin yoga, on my computer, and I'll do an hour of yoga as many days a week as I can.
Right.
Next best thing is to have muscles that aren't going to tear, aren't going to give out under you. Right. So I've got to do the weights. And the older you get, the even more important it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure also that if somebody's coming in, they're paying that ticket to come out. I want everything about the show to look good, and that has to include my body also.
Right.
Even if I am so blessed that I could do all the flippy and neat stuff, but I don't look like an athlete, I feel like I'd be ripping them off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to look good for Susie.
So there you go. Not only that, talk about flipping. Have you seen this guy's intro? Have you seen the way he comes into the ring?
No, but I have.
Every time,
I have a feeling you have.
I have. I was watching a replay, I think actually this past Sunday, the way you flip in that ring. I don't know how the hell you do this, but you just do this
top
rope, flip forward, flip.
Handspring off the rope.
Yes.
Second handspring into a kneel.
Yes. How long did it take you to get that move down?
First of all, how did that even happen? Did you trip and then you just like recovered and went off some way?
So when I was first getting into wrestling, I was looking for like, what things can I do? What things can I not do? And how can I dress anything up to stick out a little bit? Because I knew I was going to be lacking a little bit because I didn't have a regular trainer. It was going to take me longer to get up to speed on that.
Mm-hmm.
I also knew that, I grew up watching, Mid-South, and I was watching WWE. But then when I saw the cruiserweights, when they introduced the cruiserweights and the luchadors in WCW, I'm like, that is a significant difference, and it is much more exciting to me.
Right.
It's more interesting because if I'm big enough, I can do a lot of those basic old school Mid-South moves.
Right.
But there's a different level of athleticism for those guys doing the lucha stuff.
Bro.
So I was So I started, when I got access to cable around that same time, there was CMLL and AAA. I didn't know what the hell anybody was saying. I still can barely, I cannot actually have a conversation in Spanish. I can hear things and sometimes know what they're talking about.
Right.
I cannot reciprocate.
Right, I got you.
But I would watch what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to pick out, again, because I wasn't working with other guys trained to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What could I do where I can tell the other guy, stand here, be here. I will meet you with some part of my body.
Right.
So there was a limited stuff.
I
got to learn a lot more about lucha in the last several months working here in the Valley than I ever got to do before.
Right.
So I was watching, and I don't remember who, but I saw a dude do the handspring. He just did one handspring and landed on his feet. I couldn't do that. I kept getting too much momentum.
Right.
It's like, okay, since I'm falling, let me give into that. And then a second one, I was like, hell, that's easy. And it double flips got to be twice as good.
Right.
And I just ran with it.
Yeah.
And then when I started here, that was one of the things I was like on the list. Can I still do this? And about the third or fourth try, it worked. And I was like, sweet.
Yeah, because when I saw that entrance for the first time on Facebook Live, the first, I'm like, this guy's trying to do a who and two ring in entry, man. Who and two does a... grabs him, does the whole flip forward, and everything. So does Super Psycho, and I believe Rey Mysterio does the same thing sometimes. But when I saw you do it, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, hold on. He went the extra mile to pretty much signature it yourself. Something that, this is your ring intro. Now, is this every time you go into the ring, or this was just only on special?
No, that's my standard. Sometimes not every ring is the same.
Right.
If the ropes aren't tight, I can't handspring off of it.
Right.
It's got to give me a pushback, or I just can't do it.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I'll leave that part out. Oh, yeah. I really like doing the handspring against the rope and coming back.
Right.
But it also is one that just requires really tight ropes.
Real tight ropes, yeah, I hear you. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, was learning lucha part of what you came down to the Valley for, or was it just to add on to your repertoire kind of thing?
For work. The first time I came down, it was to run the behavior services department for the Rio Grande State Supported Living Center. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back, it was to run the clinic here in Harlingen, and then it opened up so that I could run both clinics.
Nice, okay.
And I'm pushing for us to be moving on opening a clinic in Brownsville as well. I think we've got the staff.
Oh, okay.
And there's definitely the need. So I think we have the staff. So I asked the CEO last time she was here in the Valley last week, I'm like, hey, I think it's time. Let's keep things moving.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
So hopefully that comes through for you. That'd be great, helping out the community more like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So besides hanging out with Susana, besides doing the wrestling, besides doing the pay the bills job, what
and
are your
making
hobbies?
Awesome merchandise.
And also making killer merchandise, by the way. But what are your hobbies? What do you like to do in your time off? I mean, pretty alone time. Alone, just besides sleep.
Relax. There is very little left after that. But I'll get on the computer. I'll play games a little bit. I tend to fixate on one game at a time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was playing Baldur's Gate 3 a lot.
Nice.
And now I play it a little bit when I have a chance.
Right.
I'll usually steal an hour every day or two to play Magic the Gathering online.
Oh, okay.
And that's it. There's just so much time spent with the rest of that stuff. When I was living in Florida, which is where I was in between the two states here in the Valley,
right?
I was able to get hooked up at a local card shop that also had like weekly Dungeons and Dragons games,
oh,
and that was a lot of
that.
Fun. But it's one of those games that, like, you know, you've got to have a good handful of hours at a time,
mm-hmm, sure.
And by the time you hit the gym a few days a week. And then I go to training. I try at least 2 days a week, and mm-hmm. those are normally 3-hour sessions. They weren't the whole week, and then on the weekend there's the shows. That's all the time.
That's all the time you got. And I got questions coming from the Beefy Boy Bros. Big shout out to the True B, our next door neighbors here. This is, what type of wrestling is the toughest to wrestle, and what title are you going for?
For me, I think the toughest is lucha because I haven't gotten as much training with it as I would like.
Yeah.
The easiest for me would be poroso, where it looks like an MMA fight. You know, like the old stuff that Ken Shamrock did before he went to the UFC.
Right.
Gotcha.
And the reason is because we can basically just spar. You
right,
know?
Right.
So when I'm working with some guys, I've had even a couple people mention, you know, it's like, boy, it looked like you really hit him with that kick. I'm like, of course I hit him with the kick. Why wouldn't I?
that's kind of the point of the kick.
Yeah. And, you know, because I spent years in karate. I mean, like, we're hitting each other.
Right.
So like the sparring rules for the competitions we did, the body, which is everything from the groin to here, is full contact.
Right.
Face is kiss contact, and the head is light contact.
Right.
But you're doing that to somebody who's absolutely trying not to get hit. So you got to get your, you know, your hands and your feet there really fast.
Right.
And
right.
then you got to control it enough so that you don't knock out the guy, because then you lose on a DQ if you do.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm very comfortable kicking people in the face. And I know that I'm not going to nail them more than I mean to. But I got to practice that a lot in a different type of setting.
Mm-hmm.
So poroso would be great. But it's just a style that they don't do much in America.
Yeah.
But when I get to have a match that the point is to look like we are not getting along well.
Okay.
And
okay,
we
I gotcha.
Are showing that high level of intensity, mm-hmm. and I get to just lock on, I get to just pound somebody in. I don't necessarily have to worry about whether or not it's pretty.
Right.
The focus is on the intensity.
Right.
It looks like it's the hardest match, but it's the easiest to do.
Oh, there you go. That's something I would enjoy to watch.
Yeah. And see, me thinking that maybe the lucha side was going to be a little bit more Because I don't think I'm understating it when I say this. Luchadores kind of have to be religious about their training because they really dedicate their entire body to a move sometimes. And when I say sometimes, I mean like most of the time, you know, launching yourself off a rope, diving into the ring, you know, just in every move. But knowing that about Porzo, and like, yeah, I can kind of see where, you know, the two might intersect a little bit.
And we have another question for here. It goes, Jacinto Rivera saying, can we see the demonstration kick to choose face, please, to believe you, sir?
Yeah. All right. All right, turn off the show. The show's over. All right, good night, everyone.
So on that note, we will go ahead and go straight into our sponsors. Though that's a very good question, Jacinto.
No, it's not, Jacinto.
It's a beautiful question. But we're gonna go straight into our sponsors here. So we'll hang in there right there. Let me see, get you going. First of all, they say a big thank you to Notice Constructions. Give this guy a call, 956-363-7195. Give a call, Tony a call. Great guy, great craftsmanship. Commercial, residential, new construction, renovations. These guys do it all, man. You want to give them a call, let them know. Chewing News sent you. I mean, they've been doing a lot of stuff the last couple of weeks. I know he was telling me he was out of town. I think he was, going to Houston again or San Antonio, I think I'm not mistaken.
He's been traveling back and forth. They got a lot of business going on.
Yeah, they've been on and off everywhere. So give them a call if you guys are looking to
get... But they're still helping pay the bills, so God bless them.
Yeah, God bless them. But if you're looking to get renovations for residential or commercial...
Or build a new house or new building,
give these guys a call. They are the man. Another big shout out to Triple J Plumbing.
Oh, thank God for this guy.
Especially with the flood that came here in Wesco. These guys have been working nonstop.
Absolutely.
Give Juan a call at 956-854-9622 or call Jerry at 956-478-5316. They have a lot of work. They are licensed plumbers. Hospital grade work also for hospital plumbing. You want to give them a call. They're very good. I know they've been getting a lot of phone calls, like I said, after the flood thing that happened here in Wesco. Yes. Hearts go out to all the people that got, some bad water damage to their homes, man. Hope sooner or later that gets fixed up. I know I got a couple of buds at work that did suffer through that. And they are still trying to piece the puzzle together so they can get back on their feet again.
Yes,
but hearts go out to the man. Hopefully they can get through it. But give Triple J a call, and they'll gladly help you out. Remember, your crap is their bread and butter. So we're coming back here, and we are back again.
Ooh, just love saying that.
I know. It's so fun to say.
It's
so fun to say.
Because he made it up.
Yes, I did. And it fits the bill. Yeah, so we're back with Mr. CYA.
No. Let's block a seat, though.
Goes,
we don't need that.
And I got another question here. It goes from Frank the Tech. I want to see you kick Toxico in the face. Okay.
Ooh.
We're going to get... Every wrestler that comes in this month, I want to get down to this dude.
I want
to
ask you, what the hell did Toxico do to you?
This is what I want to know.
This is so much shit talking to this Toxico, kid, man.
Talk to us. What's going on here, CYA? What is going on? The new breed that everybody wants is kid's number. Does he have a target in his face, his back? What's going on?
A little bit. I think it's the smoke.
Ooh, really?
Have you had to try to breathe through that stuff?
No.
Is it on TikTok?
He comes out with those smoke grenades, and dear God, man.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Ooh, that's thick. You know, and then you got poor Martin there. Martin just loves him to death, and he's just treating Martin so bad. Just dogging him and beating him down all the time. You know, and Martin just like a puppy. He just doesn't understand, you know, that the person kicking him is not his friend.
Right. Because the party was here last week, and they were just chanting out.
They left a mess.
By the way,
I stepped in something walking in the studio.
It's the STDs.
That's what I'm afraid of.
You should be afraid of me.
I need to take my leg off now.
By the way, I disinfected everything that you're seeing on right there, so you don't.
You're fine.
You're fine. But yeah, they've been going at this kid left and right. For some reason, nobody likes this kid, you know. And I kind of feel bad for the guy. I'm gonna have to figure out, Toxico, if you're watching, we're gonna have to get you on the podcast so you can set the record straight on what's going on. you and the new breed, man, because this is getting a little crazy out here. And I got Jacinto saying, Chew's face needs a swift kick. Sweep the leg.
You know what,
sweep the leg.
You know what, Jacinto?
And we're saying here, Toxico is tacky and I hate him. This is Frank the Tank. And then I got also Jacinto coming back saying, STDs will do to a guy. I'm not sure about that.
I'll take your word for it.
But anyways, we're a new breed. You're coming in. Are you set? Every wrestler that I've spoken with, they're always setting the goal on where they want to be and where they want to be at. I've already seen you. The first time I saw you, actually, is actually that street fight y'all had against Nightmare and Pete Payne, which something I said that I was going to I told the fans I was going to talk about. You have your partner, first of all. You're getting your ass beat, first of all, and your partner disappears into the crowd. At that point, I'm pretty sure you're looking like, where the hell is the help? Because you're getting a beat down of a lifetime right now.
A little bit. Mooncat is, being around Mooncat is kind of like being inside of a Looney Tunes cartoon. So, you know, you expect anything.
Right.
Where did Roadrunner go? Where did Roadrunner go from?
Why do I feel like Wile E. Coyote? So, if you go back and watch this match is going to be locked in my mind. It's one of those matches, and I don't care who, you can fight me about it, because to see this up close and personal, I've seen it only on wrestling, on TV, WWE, and I'm talking about Mick Foley getting tossed from the top of the cage into a table by The Undertaker. This was this close to being like that, because at this moment, you're getting your butt whooped down there. And you're holding your own, by the way. And Mooncat pulls a 10-foot ladder, climbs a tree, goes about at least 25, maybe 20 feet into the air. Now, take us through that point. When you see this kid up in that tree, what is going through your mind, first of all?
Well, I didn't see where he was until just before he jumped. I got drug over there. by Pete Payne. So I look up, I'm surrounded by two huge masses of men. I look up, and there's a much smaller man. But he looks really small way up there.
Right.
So, yeah, there was some quick mental calculations. But, you know, that's 20-plus feet. I mean, he's little, but he's got to weigh 150 to 170 pounds. You accelerate 9.8 meters per second.
He's doing the math.
Son of a bitch. This is going to suck.
Oh, gosh. And the impact, because I went back and watched the replay.
Wait, what happened?
I watched the replay. I don't have enough fingers to count how many times I watched it. I see Pete, when he's coming down, you can see Pete was ready to receive the impact, and then he's like, he did a Samoa Joe. Took a left. And Nightmare was like, okay, I got this, and I see you like, oh shit, here we go. So Nightmare gets the foot. I know you got a elbow or a knee.
I think it was more of the thigh.
There you go.
Maybe the high thigh, I think, is what I caught, and a fair chunk of that was across the forehead.
Yes.
And the problem was that, like, I know technically the speed of acceleration, but there was so much time for him to pick up so much speed,
right,
that he just got there faster than I expected.
Yeah.
So ordinarily it would be pull the head a little more out of the way, take across the chest, and then you've got this crumple and roll kind of thing.
Right.
And it was just there wasn't much time for crumpling or rolling.
It was going to the stage of Looney Tunes. It was like an Acme Anvil falling from the heavens.
There's even a plane.
After the match is over, you guys won that match, right? Now I remember. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault, dude. I mean, these guys are massive.
It was no one's fault.
It was no one's fault. It was gravity's fault.
Gravity showed up unannounced.
After that, and they continue to beat you down. You know, they took advantage of you guys as you guys were on the ground. You get the Party Boys come in. You got Bobby Felix come in and also Frank the Tank come in to rescue the day, so to say. But at that point, when the match is over and you're still getting beat down, what are you saying? Like, okay, guys, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those times where you're like, man, weight classes are sometimes a good idea. So, I mean, this is the...
Two of us equal one of you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, there's a reason that, you know, the boxers and the MMA guys, you know, they're knocking around with guys within about 5 pounds of them.
Right.
You know, it makes a real significant difference.
This is why you'll never see Mayweather fight Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I mean, because it's, you know, if you've got a weapon, the speed wins.
Right.
But, you know, when you're talking about blunt objects and bodies,
yeah,
you know, man, if I hit you 5 times, you hit me once. But
right.
You're hitting me like a Mack truck and I'm a Volkswagen. My 5 hits didn't do as much as
right.
I hoped.
Right.
All of a sudden, all that math just doesn't matter anymore.
No, so good. after they come in, right, you guys go out. What is the discussion between you and Mooncat afterwards? I mean, what the hell were you thinking when you walked up there? Or, I mean, what was the – I want to know the backstory of that. What happened after that?
Well, I mean, there's not really a lot of discussion you can have. We're talking about a guy that straps fake explosives to unicorns. And, I mean, he's just going to kind of do stuff.
Right.
And sometimes the stuff is really great.
Right.
Sometimes it's highly questionable.
And this is why Jacinto put up here, because we would like to see Eugene versus Mooncat.
I think that could be a good match.
I think he can hold his own. I think, yeah.
Yeah, but how are you going to get Mooncat in the ring? You got anything shiny to draw him in with?
an angler? I don't know.
I don't know, dude.
Put like one of those cat things and, you know, little around. That'll get his attention. Yeah, but.
You mean shine a light on the floor?
Maybe a little laser light. He's almost there.
He's almost
there.
Go.
Jesus. And then he goes, the asshole can take a pounding. Okay.
There
you go. Yeah. I don't know where that's going with that. But all right. And he said, his Mooncat jumped off the freaking tree. He really can't speak much. He's from another planet. This is true. It's true. And a psychedelic dream match. Wow.
Okay.
Wow, we're going there. We're going there, Frank.
Never heard that before.
Never leave it to a party guy to say psychedelic dream match.
Some mushrooms on a pole.
I didn't say it. I did not say it. But groovy, that would be an awesome groovy match. And Mooncat's watching. But your career so far in New Breed, how do you put it in full perspective right now? I mean, as far as that.
Whatever opportunities pop up, I'm going to take them. By nature, have some anxiety issues.
Mm.
I lead a lot of my decisions. I have to do like an extra level of thinking.
Right.
If I wasn't scared, would I do this? Like, take away the fact that I feel scared. If I was just looking at it on the merits, would I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Public speaking, terrifying. Scared of heights.
You're doing it right now.
Exactly. So when I stand on the top turnbuckle looking into the ring, man, it's a little uncomfortable, but it's doable. If I look to the outside, like this is really high. I cannot get up there and think about it at all. But that, and especially anything with my other professional life,
mm-hmm.
is it important or not? If it's important, it just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So I've spoken at professional conferences, and for the first several times, I had to take anxiety meds for me to do that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Buspar on a daily basis, and I don't know, something with a C. If I had to do like something with like real public speaking,
right.
But like on a day-to-day basis, when I was doing that job that had me doing that, I also had to go out to police departments, do a lot of crisis intervention stuff, mm-hmm. helping them develop programs for working with people with developmental disabilities,
right.
And I hate being in charge of stuff. And I'm in charge of a lot of people right now.
Right.
And the reason it breaks down to the first time I was ever put in charge of something, when I was in the National Guard. And like, we want to send you to PLDC and make you a sergeant. I don't want to get here. I don't want to get here an hour early and be in charge of these knuckleheads. And they brought me over to the window, opened the blinds, and go, all right, if we get shipped out somewhere, somebody's going to be in charge. Which one of these guys do you want us to put in charge instead of you? And I was like, well, shit. I guess I'll go. And that's been my experience with leadership. I've seen people that were great at what they did and they loved what they did decide they didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore mm-hmm. because they had bad leaders and bad managers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in charge of stuff, but I have no right to complain that people aren't being good leaders if I'm not trying to be that good leader.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the way that relates for me in wrestling is I will take every opportunity that comes up. If I have an opportunity to hold a title, I will hold it with pride and I will do the best job possible in showing what's great about that promotion and that title. And if the thing that I need to do the best for wrestling in general, for a promotion, is to help other guys, probably significantly younger, look good, develop their skills, I'll be super proud to do that also.
Okay, all right, I got you. Good answer.
Yeah. By the way, that whole thing of, well, you pick the guy that you want to be in charge, that's more of a threat.
That's exactly what that was.
That's more of a threat.
Well, put it that way.
See that guy eating soap? He's a general now. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. He's the guy eating crayons?
Yeah.
He's
the master sergeant.
He's a chef. We're going to put him in the back lines. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
What he does, you do right now.
Right. No kidding, man. As far as, I was going to say something that I lost track of. I was going to say, this was a beauty about live Facebook, man. When you got a question in your mind, you're like, okay, this is the next question I'm going to ask, and it just goes away. Greatest moment in the ring so far? Besides catching Mooncat from swinging on my feet.
The greatest moment for me personally, I was doing a match with Byron Wilcott when he was working as the Angel of Sin, and we were just, he was giving me the feedback in the moment, in the match, and he looked over and he looked really satisfied. He was trained by Dr. Death, and then Dr. Death's throat cancer came back.
Right.
And then he went on to train with Rodney Mack and Jazz. He was super well trained, very, very professional, very serious about what he did. And he had spent a lot of time, at that point, he hadn't spent a lot of time with me. He had spent a little bit of time working with me, and he was satisfied with the work I was doing in that match.
All right.
And I was like, I am not a chump. I'm not an embarrassment to this really
approval. Gotcha.
Yeah. And that was the biggest thing for me. And it wasn't any really big moves or nothing. It was kind of the totality of that match where we were making it look convincing. Mm-hmm. And I'm all of about 175 pounds, and he's like 260 and 6'4". And he was giving me what I was needing, and I was putting stuff back so that we were making a convincing match despite almost 100 pounds difference.
Right.
And that was great. And so every time I see like Nikki Fuego in a match with a guy mm-hmm. and she's making it look convincing, that is hard for a lady to do.
Right.
She's got to put more. If there was a guy the same size as her, she has to give more and be sharper than that guy would be. And she can do it often. So I'm reminded of it every time I see her do it.
And the funny thing, you say that because you cannot see the comments that I'm tossing up there. I'm going to give you one right here. This is from that right there. So you can read that out loud if you like. This is Adhole has helped Nikki get over a few of her fears during training. So good leader, in my opinion. Nice. That's straight from Jacinto Rivera, man. That's
nice.
That's a good one, man. Yeah. You know, and it's those kind of comments that make you like, hey, man, you know, wipe that little bit of dirt right there, you got, scrub it off. Like, yeah, damn right.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's good to hear because it means not only that you're doing your thing, you're inspiring other people to say, hey, if he tells me I can do it, then I could probably do it. I just got to get over that fear of doing it. And you're right. She's gone through a lot of matches. And for some reason, Nikki Fuego has come literally here in this podcast where wrestlers come in has been mentioned so many times. It's crazy. You're like, wow. And I've mentioned quite a few wrestlers here in the pod with different athletes that come in. But her name pops up everywhere, man. And it's interesting. Like,
she has the perfect attitude. She is also somebody like I ran through, like, I'm doing like three or four things and it's keeping me very busy. Mm-hmm. She's got orchestra, ROTC, her academics that she's doing in school, the wrestling. And she's not just doing all that. She's doing all of that stuff really well. And every opportunity where she gets to have the ear of somebody or she has the opportunity to hear from somebody, she is always soaking it up, always looking for it. And if you've got that kind of attitude and you're willing to put in the work, and then afterwards you're like, how did it go? And you take that feedback in and you take it honestly, mm-hmm. you're awesome. And Nikki is always 100% right on doing that.
Right, right.
So not only is she a talent in the ring, but that evokes people to want to share.
Right.
You've got somebody with... you've got these guys in the Valley that have a lot of experience, and they have experience doing multiple styles. And when you've got somebody, you're not just like, because you'll occasionally do that when you're the older guy, you've got some experience, you want to share it, and you see that they don't give a shit about what you're saying.
Right.
They're just letting it flow off like, no, you know, okay, guy, but I've got this special other thing. I'm just different.
Right.
And then you don't want to share. So when you get somebody like Nikki that is absolutely listening, and then when you go over something a couple times maybe mm-hmm. in practice or prepping for something, and mm-hmm. then you get to see her execute it in the ring, mm-hmm. now you absolutely know she was listening.
Right.
And that just makes you want to go, hey, I had another idea. I saw how you do this, and I think these are some things you can put on with it if you'd like. And you know that she's going to take that under advisement.
Right.
Doesn't mean she's going to do it, because... like, hell, I think just adding an extra spin to something is fucking awesome.
Right.
I think that's great. But not everybody wants to add a spin to everything.
Right.
But you give her the options. Like, hey, if you want to, you could do this. If you want to, you could do that. And you can give her these different branches where a move or a set of moves can become something different.
Right.
And then you see her execute it and pick which one of those branches she likes.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. And it makes you want to share more.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. That's awesome, man. To know, I mean, that... I mean, like you said before, there's so many guys, like, exactly. There's some people that are out there like, well, yeah, okay, you know, I got my certain style. I'm never going to share what I can do and that maybe can help you along the way, you know. But so far, like I said, the wrestlers that we've talked to that I've had in the pod, they're always willing to share with her, man. And because, hey, you know, they see something in her that's something special. So I'm like, wow, I just hope, you know, it pushes her above and beyond where she wants to be. You know, it's being so young too, man, and you know, the future's wide open for her, man, to decide what she wants to do. So, worst match. I'm putting you in the spot here. Worst match ever.
Worst match ever. A guy whose name I absolutely can't remember. In a town whose name I also can't remember, somewhere in Louisiana. It was a guy that I hadn't met before. You know, we went over. You know, what was supposed to happen. We get, you know, not very far, maybe 5-6 moves in deep, telling, dude, you've got to freaking hit me, man. Two more moves, you don't get to do anything else. And it was a squash match after that. You know, I like to think, I hope that I dressed it up so that it was still at least a little entertaining for the audience, but we didn't get to have a back and forth. He just wasn't, he wasn't properly trained.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. or at the very least, the training all went away when he got in front of a crowd.
Oh, okay.
You know, so he just wasn't executing. And one of the things that I like to tell people is I'd rather ask you to lighten up than to have to tell you to hit me. Because if you're not giving me something, then we both look bad if I do anything other than shrug it off and whoop up on you. So that's what that match turned out to be. I felt like I was roughing him up afterwards, you know, just a real quick conversation. I was like, hey, man, this was why it happened that way, you know, because it wasn't, you couldn't talk about it, right?
Right.
I just got to mention, it's like, you don't get anything else. And then I just beat on him for the next 5 to 7 minutes. And then afterwards, I told him, like, this was why, this makes, you know, we all look better doing it this way than the other way. And then we got to spend a little time together, you know, going over, like, this is how it could have been different.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how you can simplify things until you are able to make it more complicated.
Right.
But that was the worst because, you know what, I think it was the worst because I wasn't comfortable doing that to another person yet.
Okay.
Because I will totally do that to somebody now and I won't feel bad about it.
Right.
But at the time, it was the first time that I had been the more experienced person and the other guy just could not carry it.
Oh, okay, I get you.
And I didn't like the way that felt at the time.
Right. Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Toughest match.
Toughest? It's the one I got hit in the kidney because I thought it was a snapmare and a boot to the back. And he caught me in the kidney. It was the first time I'd ever taken, not the kidney, but the liver. And that was the first time I'd ever taken a liver shot. And somewhere there's a tape of it, if my ex hadn't destroyed it. You just see my hands kind of shrivel up and I just slowly fall to my side.
Jesus.
And he's like, blah, blah, blah. He comes over, he picks me up by my head, and you can see there's just no muscle tone in my legs. So when he lets go of me, I just collapse.
Holy moly.
And I'm just begging him to pin me. Pin me. And he goes, and then I think at that point it kind of clicks what happened. He goes, oh, we got to do the finish. So he picks me up, sets me on the top turnbuckle, superplex.
Oh my God.
Into like a little, you know, so we kind of overroll and pull him back into the pin. So we did that. I was able to move a little bit by then. It was about a minute long to get there and I could start moving. But it took about 6 hours for me to quit hurting.
No.
But there for about a minute, I couldn't move. And after that, whenever I saw someone in the UFC take a liver shot and they're just bloop, I'm like, yep, I know what that feels like. There's nothing you could do about it.
Been there, done that. Get up, you wussy. Oh my gosh.
There's nothing you can do. It doesn't matter what that person does. Your body just shuts down. Yeah. All those toxins get kicked back into your body.
Oh.
And your body says, I guess I'm dead now.
Yeah. Okay, it's time to leave.
It's time to go.
No, that's pretty much a universal.
It's time to go.
Yeah, it's a universal thing.
I know Triple B always asks this question. I'm going to ask you right now. You're Mount Rushmore of wrestlers.
Oh, man. Other than to preface and say that I have no such qualifications to pick them. I'll just tell you the ones that they're personal for me. So when I was a kid, Junkyard Dog,
and
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah.
Those were the just the regular working guy kind of level guys that that I watched and dad latched on to.
Right.
Jake the Snake, pretty much behind that.
Wow.
And then you get into the WCW days, the impression that Rey Mysterio Jr. made, right? Like, people always lie about how big you are, how old you are, and all this stuff. But he was a kid, and he was super small, and he was in there doing it with those guys. And that level of athleticism was incredible to me, and it still is. Even now that I've been exposed to the wider world of Lucha Libre, and it's still just incredible athleticism.
Right.
To pick a fifth,
freaking Jacinto's coming after you.
I told you to block it.
Terrible human being, but combination of how he got, how he worked stuff where people just used him as a mascot. Hulk Hogan, you know, got a lot of mainstream stuff going for it.
Right.
You got to include him somewhere on there for the way he got. And he also killed a lot of promotions. But if he hadn't done the stuff to kill the promotions, the first part of his, you know.
Career takeoff.
Yeah, so when he'd get in there and it would give it a boost. And then, and I relate to it, when I was doing those little shows myself, there was an older guy that had experience with wrestling, and I'm like, okay, well, you know what's going on. And he was doing stuff to put himself over at the expense of everybody else.
Right.
And that ended up killing the shows in that little town I was in.
Yeah, I hear you. And I got Jacinto asking, forget the kick, forget the face. Chew needs a kick to the kidney, please.
All right, Jacinto, first of all.
What'd you do to him?
I was born. That's what I did to Jacinto. All right.
Oh, my God.
First of all, I go to dialysis or something. Joke's on you.
Joke's on you.
Second of all, turn off the show.
Turn off the show. No shit, right? Last but not least, man, before we're already going to be 50, we're 59 minutes into the podcast. El Chupacabra. I don't know, here's a guy, Carlos Rodriguez is putting it on there. El Chupacabra. Okay.
That was my original wrestling character.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
And I loved it. Usually wore a snakeskin pattern singlet.
There you go.
Where I was wrestling, no one knew Lucha Libre, so I wore an Averno mask, different versions of that. Because there was no place that I knew to get a custom mask made.
Okay.
So I did that. And
Internet, send us a picture, Internet.
Yeah, we need a picture. Someone send us a picture so we can put that up.
Send us a picture.
Yeah, I've still got a couple. Like, had a little, you know, before everybody had smartphones, I had little, 5x7s that I would sign. I've still got a couple of those.
Oh, okay. You know.
Send us a picture of that. I'll put that out on this in particular skit so we can throw it on the people to see. I was going to ask you, a question I want to ask you. Now that the years have gone by, through and through, what do you want to be remembered by?
It's going to be little things, just little things for different people. Most of the things that I've done that are going to really be useful, people aren't even going to remember my name. They're like, yeah, there was that guy that worked with me when I was a kid, back when I did my counseling, and that really helped with this, that, or the other. They're going to remember that their kid went to therapy for a while, they improved their skills, but they're going to forget the names of most of the therapists and stuff, and that's fine. Because unless you are doing something incredibly amazing or incredibly horrible, no one remembers your name after 100 years. Even your own family is going to forget. You're just going to be great, great grandpa, whatever. There's going to be a neat story, but they're not even going to remember your name.
Sure.
I got you, man. Well, first and foremost, we want to say thank you so much for coming to the podcast. We're an hour and minute in already. Thank you for coming to the podcast, man.
Any
social medias, yes, please.
That you want to plug?
Just my Instagram, which I barely know how to work. at Mr. Athol. No E on that one because apparently someone took the Athol with an E.
What?
Wow.
I don't believe it.
Why not? Yeah.
Small world.
Well, that's on my Instagram. No,
it's a real Scottish name. It's just an unfortunate one, you know, for most people, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, I got you.
I hear you.
I totally agree with you. Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. She's putting out something here. One more thing. Says, they will remember a crazy...
And wow. Invite her to the podcast. We have questions.
We have lots of questions. No, but first I want to say thank you again, man, for coming out and having a little fun with us, talking a little behind the scenes story of who you are, where you came from, where you grew up, and how you got into the wrestling.
Do you have these weighted stuff to unicorns for sale?
I don't, but Target does.
Target, okay.
Yes. The day of the incident with Mooncat, I had an idea. Given the folks in the match, I'd seen Johnny Bay the week before with his slow motion run, and I knew Mooncat. I'm like, I've got an idea, and so we went with that. So I needed a Eugene. So I did some looking and found him at Target.
Okay. There you go.
So Target carries the Pillow Fort. Weighted guys.
It's a weighted one. Okay.
It's a weighted.
Yeah, good. And I like the fact it's a unicorn, bro. It fits the... Yeah. That's what this little guy right here in the front is.
Unicorns are the national animal of Scotland.
There you go, man.
Oh, okay. Man, I'm learning so much Scottish history.
That's where they can't be found.
That's where they are.
That's where they are. But, here you go. If you're looking for his...
Do I?
is my social media. Just go to MySpace. That's what they'll say. No, once again, thank you so much for coming to the pod, man.
Come back anytime.
Anytime you want to come by and promote some more stuff or some more stuff that's going on happening for the Spectrum or anything in your job, even if you want to come in and talk about, bring some people from your job that want to talk about this, our doors are always open to you.
Absolutely.
Or if you just want to hang out in our cool new studio. As soon as we clean it up, party boys.
There's a webinar that I'll be doing on Wednesday of next week. I believe it starts at 5:30, but for one of the local health systems.
Okay.
I don't remember. I didn't write it down.
Well,
but there's a webinar that they'll be doing, and I'll be hosting that for autism next week.
Send us the link, and we will upload it in our TuneIn Podcast Facebook page, our Instagram. That way people can tune in and check that out, because it's good to have stuff like that so people can be informed. You know, and it's a great way to, you know, inclusion. That's the word. Inclusion. That's the main word.
Yep. Awareness is nice, but acceptance and including people is a world of difference.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, stuff like the that you got a prom or something, and it's just too much noise.
Right.
Can you have a balcony that's also decorated and as nice as the inside, but the volume's going to be lower?
Right.
And then the students with autism can be there and not be overstimulated and still completely participate.
Right.
That's a lot better than just being aware.
Yeah. And it's like I told my son, he tells me that in my autistic, you're not. You're authentic. You're authentic, my friend. My beautiful son. Like I said, once again, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing. Doors always open. Hit us up with that link so we make sure we go ahead and post it on our Facebook page. That way everybody can go on. I still got people added on here. I got Carla Rodriguez saying, we love Eugene. And then we got Jacinto saying, Eugene is now more over than all the other folks in the locker room.
He got a chant the second time he came out.
Really?
They were chanting for Eugene.
There you go.
And I'm like,
just don't go out there and do Al Snow and do this stuff, man. Please don't do that. For what the hell are you doing? That thing could talk. Don't do that to me.
Eugene.
Oh, my God. You must have a lot of stories, Eugene. We have to have you on the podcast.
We're going to talk, Eugene.
But here you go. That one's for you. I'll leave that one for you. Like I said, thank you so much, man. You're welcome back anytime. And keep doing what you're doing. And God bless you, bro. You're doing great things out there. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is our podcast for today. Next week, if everything goes according to plan for next week, and the podcast gods just smile at us next Thursday on the 17th of April.
It's going to be a bloodbath. It's not gonna go well.
Stop! Shut up!
Fuck!
We have Pete Capella for a second time. Hopefully, our internet is working. Voice actor for Silver Sonic from the Sonic series.
I can't believe he returned our calls, dude.
I know, dude. I can't believe it. He might be wearing a. He might. I mean, it's a might. He might be wearing our cap and our merch for the podcast. All I know is that he'll be in El Paso this weekend signing autographs in El Paso. Hopefully, he's wearing our merch there. Thank you so much.
I'm being shipped via UPS to El Paso to verify this stuff right now.
So. Not only that, guys, a big, humongous shout out to this past Saturday when you go see the greatest band in the earth. Well, smallest, greatest band in the world. Mini Kiss was here last Saturday. I went with Beefy Boy Roe. It was awesome. I took a picture with Little Peter Chris and Gene Simmons. And I gave him a Chewy New Podcast cap, and he worked for the rest of the night taking pictures. So thank you so much. A big shout out to those guys.
They're awesome.
Awesome. You guys, if you missed it, I think, crossing my fingers, they'll be back in the summer for the Summer Bash. I'm hoping. But since they're on tour right now.
Right.
They're a mini tour. no pun intended. Yeah, it was a great concert. Big shout out to them. Thank you so much for the entertainment that we had down here. Great, great response. And they had actual wrestling that day also. Beforehand, I think it was like about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
4 to 5:30.
Around there. It was awesome. That was awesome too. But Jacinto's still kicking in. Hey, Chew's kick. No. Chew's not taking a kick. You think he's getting a kick enough going up the stairs and downstairs, so there's no elevator. So don't worry. I'll push him down and videotape it. Just make sure you subscribe to our podcast. That's a way to kick off our podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. It's only $1.99 a month. You might get that video where I just push him off the edge so we can see.
Not you, Hussy. No, not you.
Let's take a bet. Let's see how many times he bounces all the way down. I'm saying six.
Challenge accepted. Let's go. End the show.
End the show. Guys, thank you once again for watching. We'll see you next week at 7:30 with Pete Capella, Supersonic on the podcast. Any last words, Chew? Dead silence. That sounds good. That's all going up to you. Jacinto, we will see you next week. Sign us out.
I've been Chew.
And I, we will see you next week. Latest, gayest. Peace
Bye,
out.
Everybody.